All right.
Thank you. Mitchell used the edge of a stone in the nun's wall to prise the cap off a Guinness bottle. He positioned the crimped rim of the cap on the stone and hit down on it hard with the heel of his hand. A spew of white foam came out and he had to hit it again before the cap was free. He took a slug and said he hated Guinness, like he was an expert. Then he took another slug. But Guinness was all I could get. I took the two bottles from the first crate inside the tailor store door and legged it. I wasn't going poking around looking for Smithicks for Mitchell to be caught by the tailor. He'd already said he'd squeeze us and leave us with near a ball between us if he caught us near the stores again. I didn't like the taste of the Guinness and handed the bottle to the Mars Bar kid. Mitchell opened the second one. I sat with my back to the nun's wall and I could see the back door of our house and watch for my mother in case she'd come out. I was also keeping an eye on the gate that went out between the boys' and girls' toilets of the school for Father Daly. That was the route he'd take if he knew we were hanging about the field. He hated us hanging around the school, or the clubhouse, or kicking ball in the football pitch after school, or robbing apples from the orchard behind, and he patrolled like John Armstrong's Alsatian. The boys' clubhouse was where scouts gathered, and boxing training, press-ups and pull-ups and sit-ups took place. The lower half housed burnt pots and camping equipment with bits missing for the cubs and scouts. And the top of the hall, beneath the stage, there was a heavy bag and a speedball stretched between floor and ceiling with bicycle tube. In a tea chest there were pairs of gloves for sparring and mittens for the bags. I loved the smell of leather and the press-ups and the sit-ups and the sparring and the heat that came off the storage heaters with the big stone in it. And the clubhouse was where Joey's older sister taught Irish dancing on Saturday mornings and gave out crunchies to the girls when Joey and me hung around outside shouting like yabos and knocking on the windows and looking in and hoping she'd give us a crunchie or even half of one between the two of us just to get rid of us. Anyway, Mitchell slugged from the bottle and passed it to Joey and then opened his trousers and showed me his mat of hair. I thought he must have got an injection or something to make it grow like that because he was the only one that had it. I didn't know what to do and was in dread my mother was looking out through the kitchen window. As the bottle went around, it reminded me of the under-12 final when the Marisbar kid played in goal, and afterwards we passed the cup around and there were bits of potato from other fellas' mouths floating around in the lemonade. But I didn't care and drank it anyway. At least with a Guinness bottle, you couldn't get bits of potato into it. I knew Mitchell wasn't afraid of Father Dignan or my mother and was liable to say anything in his English accent. At Halloween, he shouted from behind a tree at Mrs. Morn that she'd be a horse of a woman if she could shite walk, and then went and put a banger into her letterbox. Everybody knew about it, and everybody was talking about it, and even Mrs. Morn knew it was him because of his English accent, and she was waiting to get him. And it was Mitchell who wanted to stake out the boys' clubhouse to see if it really was haunted. The problem with the clubhouse was the light was going off, on and off, even when there was nobody there. I didn't like the sound of it. Everybody was talking about that as well. I had just come to terms with the boogeyman, Jack Frost, and Wee Willie Winkins. All three looking in my window at night. Faces outside the window. All was there, ready to pounce. Mitchell didn't play football or box, but he knew how to make a bomb. You just put a piece of carbide that we got from the miners coming home from the pit in a jam jar and added water and put the lid back on and ran. And I showed him how to make a peg gun using the metal spring from the middle of a clothes peg as the bullet that would cut the eye out of your head. I fired it at bottles and crows, but Mitchell took it off me and hit David Wheaton on the forehead and left him with a lump that came up like a duck egg. Wheaton had a sister who won 3 golds and 2 silvers at the swimming in Mosney, and now she was after Mitchell as well. And I had a fight with Mitchell once. I had the knock on him like the captain showed me on the drinking room floor and was telling him to submit like Mick McManus or Giant Haystack or Big Daddy would do on the BBC in black and white at 4 on a Saturday. He's left me alone since. Thank you.
Can we have next up Hassan Baker, please?
Thank you so much.
she comes.
This is a poem called Afloat on the Endless Current. In the swollen thunder of a life, you sometimes beg to be in the crosshairs of the sniper that shoots through dog tags, because only the self-centered can be schizophrenics. And the perfect woman is the one that doesn't speak, but the perfect man is the one that never stops. I recently did such and such and got this and that from her and him and her, and achieved so much, oh so much money. Life taken like a game of chess can be tiring and sometimes rewarding. But Monopoly, well, who was actually finished Monopoly? It's funny how we dismiss bankers as being terrible cheats, yet given the fictitious opportunity, you rolled millions up your sleeves. From school to school, secondary to college, I've seen the same people, because we are all afloat, a current of dogma and traditionalism, and no one truly understands progressivism. And yes, of course, certainly and absolutely, in the end, death take us all. And like Sig Barrett, we pluck the same string over and over, and we say we have no regrets, but given a real chance. If the genie asks, will I take you back to your baby body? Your mind says yes, but your body will say no. Because you are in a hurry. Not to get it over with, but because grievance is the most potent expression of love. So where is that sniper that shoots through dog tags? Thank you.
I just cleared my throat. Grant Marks, please. Is he in here? Oh, there he is. Yeah, I can see him. So he's promised to dress up in a suit and a white shirt and a dicky bow the next time he comes.
Yeah, apologies to the regulars who may have heard this one before. Life is change. We choose that change. It all depends on us. The fabric of our society is under attack. The increasing demands of progress have made our hunger for information turn us into a fast food nation that rips the threads that bind us together, and one by one they snap. We are beginning to experience a new isolation. Care for our society is waning. Our multicultural colors are fading. Our unique identities are paling. Coca-Colaization has left a permanent stain on the dress of our civilization. Today, we live in a world where Google is the new religion that we blindly believe has all the answers, where the internet gradually kidnaps all our ideas, and it is only a matter of time before the ransom letters start coming through our letterboxes. We shed private tears from a bleeding heart, our deepest secret, words pass through our fingers like grains of sand. There is no more privacy in this land. Our communication is being bastardized by text message acronyms that rip the soul out of our languages. Consumers bragging about brands bully homemade creativity. Homogeneity is the new king, and he rules with an iron fist that hammers down any nail that sticks up. Letter writing is now something children marvel at behind the glass cases of museums. And our new communication is limited to an artificial 140 characters. As we witness the digital emasculation of our languages, soon no one will have the balls to say what they mean, and we use goddamn smileys to show that we're keen. Mutilated messages devoid of personality litter our inboxes with misunderstandings. We fall out with friends. There are no soft landings. And we will all live in towers of isolation, princesses whose only communication is done by tap, 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 tapping. We think we know who our friends are, but really, we no longer recognize them. For the faces on Facebook are old, and our memories have all become cold. Permanently turned on by the vibrations in our pockets, we will find to our cost, when the signal is lost, that our contacts have become figments of our imaginations, and that without that damn phone, we really are all alone. Yes. Our children learn to kill on 37-inch screens. They're all wearing headphones, so we can't hear the screens. And our living rooms have really become war zones in which our kids are fighting for their minds. The terms of our existence have become an increasing list of obscure legalese, with conditions that we accept with incredible ease. And we sign away our lives with the digital tick of a pen, tick of a pen, tick of a pen. No one really knows all the contracts therein, and the small print lurks in the shadows. We spend most of our lives looking through windows that can unexpectedly shut down at any moment. The blue screen of death is the latest disease. How many times must this happen? We have to forget to rely on reset. It's only a machine, but when support is withdrawn, you will know what I mean. We think a television is for entertainment, but it's not that kind of box. It's the kind of box outside of which we cannot think. The revolution will be televised, and like hungry dogs, we will roam blood-soaked streets from the comfort of our armchairs, watching people die for their beliefs. While we, political eunuchs, watch our politicians play the game of ping-pong blame. A malevolent apathy is our biggest killer. Our minds a blank canvas, forever vanilla. We're politically dead, and the only resurrection is a bullet to the head. Life is change. We choose that change. It all depends on us. Let's choose wisely.
Next we have Alright, so I was going to do a real short poem about my Elton Court, but instead, because it's something new coming here, you haven't actually heard me do my style, which I intend to repeat. I'm going to do a piece called Fighting the Man. Right.
Called what?
Fighting the Man. All my life, I had wanted to fight the man. The trouble was, I could never find him. I asked my friends and family, neighbors and strangers, but all I got was laughter, abuse, the occasional false address. I changed my tactics. I made a sandwich board that said, "Have you seen the man?" I stood on the prominent street corners of central business districts of major cities. All I found were people who seemed to know where Jesus was. I didn't want to fight Jesus. I wanted to fight the man. I sent letters in the post, 12 noon by the old clock tower, no shooters. But the postman didn't know where the man was either. I sent letters in the post. Celebrities, presidents, prime ministers, the ambassadors of 72 countries. Dear sir or madam, have you seen the man? All I got was a personalized response from a famous hip-hop artist secretary that said, "You the man." I thought about that one for a little while until I realized I didn't want to fight myself. I wanted to fight the man. I stooped as low as manfinder.com. I went on the radio. I asked the country. And all I got was a 20-minute segment on national television called Looking for the Man. a journalist showed up at my doorstep. I started receiving fan mail. Good luck finding the man and give him one from me. People started putting up posters. I found air travel tickets in my letterbox. I went on tour to the Isle of Man, the Sultanate of Oman, and Suriname, as was in there backwards. I made inspirational speeches. I talked to audiences of thousands at the open rock concert's little number called Looking for the Man. I went on Oprah. I talked to Dr. Phil. I autographed knuckle dusters, breasts, and small animals. I was beginning to enjoy myself. I bought a small island in the Bahamas with the proceeds of my autobiography, Manhunter. I married a local girl. I had two more on the side, and I bought a yacht when the book became a movie. I invested wisely. I fired my crooked accountant the week before his arrest and founded a small private bank. I dealt exclusively with the deposits of presidents, prime ministers, celebrities, and the ambassadors of six countries with solid financial systems. I bought a bigger yacht, an airline, and an oil field. I had my face on billboards from Manhattan to Mandalay. I was Time Magazine's Man of the Year. I was Forbes Magazine's Man of the Year. I was National Geographic's Man of the Century. I was fucking man.
All right. Hey, can we have Seamus Harrington, please? He's down there somewhere. He's the pilot who's brought up here a bit. Hard aboard!
This is about free downloads for your computer and what might happen. It's called free downloads. They've altered my application, activated my archives, booted my browser, buried my broadband, bookmarked my bits, connected my console, captured my cartridge, clicked on my cookies, command-deared my cursor, dropped down my devices, delved in my downloads, documented my data, dragged out my driver, displayed my desktop, erased my errata, encrypted my emails, fancied my favorites, fumbled my floppy. Fragmented my fonts, firewalled my folders, gorged on my gigabytes, grouped up my game ports, hijacked my hardware, hacked at my hyperlink, hung out my homepage, hosted my hard drive, inserted my icon, interrupted my intranet, jellied my Java, jumpered my jackplug, keystroked my kernel, kneaded my knickknacks, logged on my laptop, labeled my language, massaged my pool mouse, merged with my modem, minimized my monitor, muddled my memory, memorized my moniker, negated my network, networked my nonsense, opened my outputs, outsourced my options, plagiarized my process, programmed my printer, punctured my pop-ups, partitioned my password, queried my QWERTY, questioned my query, quoted my quandary, raided my right-click, recycled my registry, selected my software, sampled my startup, serviced my smart drive, scheduled my scanner, sentenced my shortcuts, trespassed my trackball, trojaned my toolbar, uncovered my uploads, underlined my undo, violated my version, vetoed my vectors, vented my volumes, wormed in my window, winkled my wizard, X-rated my excerpts, yawned at my yarns, zeroed my zip drive.
Punk rock. We've got Deirdre O'Brien.
This shark boat is about a photo I took of the River Lee there about 2 months ago when it was sunny and really still. It's called Stillness. A picture paints a thousand words. Not a ripple, not a puff. The sky was clear and high enough for the river to become a perfect mirror. The clarion rose to twice its height, its double windows gleaming bright. Twin clouds drifted softly by in unison on their twin sky. One photo upriver, one photo down, I captured this moment of stillness in town. But this is the stillness I wanted to find when you're only aware of what's not on your mind. Like the river's reflection, it's only skin deep, unhindered by thoughts that live underneath. My photos were perfect in every way, except for the things a photo can't say. But a picture paints a thousand words, they hissed. That's true, but a poem captures what the picture missed.
Thank you. Shall we have Charles Clark, please?
Yay! I thought we needed something quieter, older. Out of the poetry book, not by me, recognized by most people, I think. But break, 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 and I cold grey stones of sea, and I would that my tongue could utter the thoughts that arise in me. Oh well for the fisherman's boy when he shouts with his sister's play, oh well for the sailor's lad when he sings in his boat. But the lonely ships go, the stately ships go down to their haven under the hill. But oh, for the touch of a vanished hand and the sound of a voice that is still. Break, 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 at the foot of thy crags, O sea, for the tender grace of a day that is dead will never come back to thee.
Yo.
Yeah.
Thanks, y'all. And now we have Sue Blue. Yay!
Thanks for that. I'll do the one that I didn't do at the Munster Meet for the All Ireland Poetry Slam, which we went up with a crew there over the week. So I'm going to do the one that I didn't do. The spider. Spider, spider in the night. Looming, lurking in the shadows, crawling out from creepy cracks, dusty corners, dark nooks, spooking under sofa burrows, from behind my racks and hooks, spider, spider in the night, you flit forward into sight. Eek! I screech, you scramble on, quick to speed your 8 legs fumble, nimble feelers finger forwards, in the depth your hairy thorax, fangs and digits front and hind, set for your sharp deadly bite. You stare at me with many eyes, spider, spider in the night. On the walls and outside windows, spinning, weaving nets so fine, tunnel traps like eerie hair, or tangling sails to cut the air, webs for creepers, crawlers, flies, magic patterns, sticky lines. You sit and wait and feel and stay. Spider, hunter, lure your prey. You lunge forward, strike your catch, and the icky fly is trapped. Eek, I freak, and jump away, startled from my watching patch. You jolt and grab, to hide your pride. Spider, hunter, I respect you. Let you sit and we'll protect you. Spider, spider in the night. Just don't come close or we'll take flight.
It's you. It's Julie Good.
Conformity is the deformity of human evolution, a pollution of progress, an invisible few putting pressure on you to live your life as they see fit. Forget about IT, you want to be an it girl. And boys, you play with those toys that reaffirm your masculinity. Put down the pots and pans from your sister's kitchenette, throw a grenade in the oven. Till at the end of the day, it's the real men who get the loving of a trophy princess in a constant state of distress. For not only is she unable to find her way home, she cannot find herself. So she defines herself through labels and brands, obsessively self-tanned, showing Bobby Sam's hands. And it's no wonder this damsel is in distress, for each time she undresses, a whispering chorus of magazine quotes swarms Aurora. A zombie gaze, Aurora Borealis green can be seen as her fingers play the scales on her ribcage. Her young daughter watches from the bedroom door, mimicking the woman she adores. Intergenerational insecurities pass through bloodlines, but there is always a black sheep, the one who questions boundaries, who challenges cosmologies. And I say we need these odd ones out, for without them, we are carbon copies, stereotyped and docile, black and white, packed neatly into boxes. I want to see a transgender Rosa Tralee, a hairy biker Montessori teacher, a friendly bouncer, a bouncy castle bouncing gay couple celebrating their child's birthday, a breastfeeding comic reading mother sitting alongside her sister whose decision not to procreate or settle down does not leave her gathered around drunken relatives at weddings suggesting Johnny at the bar has an ex-wife fancy car and outdoor jacuzzi. I mean, has anyone even asked Johnny if he wants to marry? No, you're just assuming. I want to meet a hopscotching bird watching tattooist without any tattoos, see a pincushion faced Nemo reading the news, a model in a wheelchair, imperfection being the new black, but along comes the DSM and attacks our identity, labelling us nonconformists mentally ill, proposing to cure us with a pill, or at least airbrush away our ideas then painting them as their own. But I live in hope my nonconformist seed has been sown. Thermogliff. I'll do the rant about fast food, what's it called again?
Hey.
Eating disorder. To the age of anxiety, according to some, people are attacked by panic or comfortably numb as prescribed pills rattle in handbags and pockets, the sales of bath salts and headshots rocket. This modern percussion of self-loathing pills is pharmacists dancing from altars of chills. I thought medicine was supposed to be about healing, the science of feeling, holistic care, becoming aware of how to nourish body, mind and soul, how healthy living starts at home, by growing, picking, peeling, chopping. All this can be done whilst body popping to your favourite junior, chef, DJ, private dancer, whilst lowering your chances of getting cancer. But should I work all hours? I'm at 40 kids. I hardly have time to take off the lids of the powder soups. I do be cooking. Add the lids to the ingredients. I don't be looking.
I still take the time, but your microwave dinner's never did me any harm. It's very handy to have a third arm.
We are witnessing a supersize epidemic. It's no surprise since the service is systemic where the waiter wants to know would your child like nuggets, burger, sausage with their chips? 7-Up Coke, perhaps the healthy option. Fruit juice. Have you tasted that shit? There's more fruit than fish. Genetically modified ways. Ronald McDonald can go choking his own vomit. Have I gone too far? Hell no, motherfucker. I'm a child. I'm a mother, not a father. And my child likes broccoli. Why? Because I put it on her plate from an early age. I want to dispel the myth that has been cast in order to eat healthy, you need lots of cash. What you need is cop on and knowledge. So when your kids go to college, they know how to cook. Books tell us you are what you eat. I see a lot of processed people walking down the street. Who don't like to hear Black Beauty is in frozen dinners.
Beaver Salmon has proved to be a winner, so let's bring it back to this age of panic. The future is in our hands. These hands hold intelligence of generations gone by, and how to need dough, not need dough to buy ready-made shite. Gormagod.
Is this Sinead Ryan? Oh, here she comes.
Beneath the torn flag, on patrol, scoping, uniform in desert heat, sweat trickles in jagged tension, laughter and jokes mask young men's fear. Halt of progress, a herd of goats, voices ahead, one dangerous click, then hell explodes, shrapnel tearing, flames engulfing. Young men die in an empty war for an empty peace. Young men carried home under a torn flag to empty hearts that forget to grieve.
Thank you.
This is kind of loosely titled When Time Stopped Crawling and Started to Run. I remember when the seconds and minutes used to bleed as time dragged and tore its path through the ragged days of my past. Time was my most feared enemy then, a living sadist intent on breathing pain. Until time stopped. Somewhere along the way, the world kept moving, and because time was stopped, suddenly I could see. As the world moved and lived, played and laughed, I saw life and time become one, not an entity to be feared, but a portal through which life's web was spun. Then another visitor came to call as cancer forced its way into my life. Suddenly there were no more seconds and minutes. Now it was hours running headlong into days and weeks. Time, once an unwanted enemy, was now a gift escaping, slipping through my fingers. Now, as time flies by, and as life's web is spun, I run and fly with it, spinning my own web. In the time that's left, hopefully forever, I will live my life in a rainbow of stars.
Next we have Boy Gurney Ola. Maureen, are you there? Maureen, you were. Maureen, this guy used to come back and see you. And so these big people down the back, like, you know.
The poem called Faith. In the dankness of the long-suffering womb, a new faith begins its cycle, unfurling with the limp flaccidity of three-day-old deli ham. Undulating gently, it glides forward, graceful in the gait of the unborn. The moist air makes it want to sneeze, but it does not yet have any nostrils, only neatly drawn diagonal slits. Repetitive circular motion set it swirling towards the full whirlpool. In the turbulent waters, it tumbles and spins, soaking up its expression, doused in communication, drenched in the unspoken word. After 64 rotations, it is hung out to air dry, permitted certain hour sunlight, shaped by a wandering wing, marched across by crows with microscopic feet. The side softened for expert application. It will wait cocooned in pangolin, lying in its plastic swaddle under blue-tinged LED lights. Eventually, it will be flayed, unwrapped and examined. Each cellular boundary will be aligned. euphoric with this new freedom, it will latch to its new post, a pampered, fattened leech. With a series of sucking noises, it slithers into position, bound for a foolproof, skin-tight fit.
And if you have Thomas, I know Thomas is second name, but I believe he's with Maureen. Here he is, yeah. A likely lad.
This is called a leopard bar in America. This is called a leprechaun in America. Light a fire. Light a fire, it's going to be cold tonight. Sit on it, maybe you'll start moving. Moving is easy, all I have to do is sit in a chair. The illusion of sitting still is the reality. Running all over main with those princes, don't settle for them. Not yet. The beat streets of Frisco are still a playground. A new, tall, decaf cinnamon twist latte playground. Enjoy it. Love it. Only pose tactfully for photos. Everybody's watching. But all the reporters are the same. A blurry photo captures life better anyway. Many snaps, instants, life. Enter into my consciousness and just as quickly leave. But won't you stay a while? Running forward with reality, not committed to paper.
Thank you. Is Cedric still around?
Yeah.
All right, you're Cedric.
That power is called Bell Down. I love you. A whisper in a lot of ear. You were Selma. And before the tenth moon, for the first time, your name you hear. It will be once before many others. You will be called away and back, in and out. And you will hear that sound. May it be coming from a cough or from a shout. It will mean everything to you, a lot more than it ever did to them. Because it may mean nothing at all, it is still the crest of your fame. The story of your life has started with it, a story in which you are the hero. That word has brought union, how to make friends, code to make hope. You became used to it. It is only natural. So you take it for granted. Now, you despise that sound. You doubt you ever wanted. In the other's memories, you now lose yourself. None of yours are ever needed, they think. But love for others feeds on love for oneself. Or like a rotting corpse, it starts to sink. Are you yelling now? Where is the love you spell? You insult, scream, give the others new names. You no longer remember and destroy that realm you and them together raised and set. You blew it to smithereens, particle for later gathered remembrance. You cast away your moon, collapse in gravity. Become something else. You will be given many names, symbol of your own lack of tolerance. Your regrets won't be enough, but crying is a start for a new story, one of many in which you will join, maybe enjoy, or eventually cry. So, in the name of love, and in your own to be fair, you must always be thoughtful when calling a name, because your word the world out there.
Let's for the week that's in it. I'll do a small poem for you. Written by Scotland's most famous poet, who's called Robbie Burns. He said this: my father was a farmer from up on the Carrick border, and carefully he raised me in dignity and order. He bade me act a manly part, though I never had a farthing, for without an honest manly heart, no man was worth regarding. So out into the world my course I did determine, though to be rich was not my pitch, to be great was charming. My talents, they were not the worst, nor yet my education. Resolved was I, at least to try, to mend my situation. Through many a way and vain a say, I courted fortune's favour. Some cause unseen still stepped between, to frustrate each endeavour. Sometimes by foes I was overpowered, sometimes by friends forsaken. And when my hope was at the top, I still was worst mistaken. And then sore harassed and tired at last, with fortune's vain delusion, I dropped my schemes like idle dreams, and I came to this conclusion. The past is dead, the future hid, it's good or ill untried, but the present hour is in my power, and so I will enjoy it. Any other poems, any other poets hanging in the back? Go up here.
But this is just a little short thing, so not keep you guys. But
take it away, cowboy.
Yeah, it's somewhere between a joke and a poem, so I apologize if it's a poor version of both. But two guys walk into a bar, wet with cigarettes and stinking of rain. The first stumbling slick and heavy into a stool, saying, "Do you remember when you were young and how the rain would run like a river through the yard, and how you, your brother and sister would splash on second skins of mud, and how you three would line up like soldiers, whose hands folding in front, feigning modesty? And in the picture I took and which your mother kept, I remembered this. And do you remember how the rain became so still and cool? And do you remember how it felt so right?" To which the second guy walks up to the bartender and says, "He'll have a beer, please."
Thank you, Emily.
I was down at Clonakilty a couple of months in September. I won't do any daddy. This is just what came from that. It was like a dream sequence poem, and it was December, and the statue of Michael Collins, I suppose, was the start of it. So this is called MCJC, and where's the best disco to be? For the night of the night. I met Michael Collins in my dreams last night. I was leaning over him, giving him the last rite, and with his final breath he whispered in eeny meeny this ear, "Oh Jesus, John, I've had my hand broke this year. Oh, I know how you feel, sister. Realise to be made up, Michael. It's funny, mad, mental, how quickly them lifetimes cycle. Only yesterday I was wagging the chin with me old chum Aristotle. We went for an early board meal deal. We went Dutch on the bottle. Says I, Aris, tell us a wish. What's the crack with this damnation? To see Jesus John, you've some whack imagination. Having me take the name of the Lord isn't clever, nor is it too PC. Jesus, JC, JC is all the... It's me who be the PC. Says I, easy there, no fellow bailout. Me sit the end. That wasn't the reason why I gave the we reinvent. Ah, oh, but Starlet Stotsy, let's chalosophize. And the boom of the split, the boom, and the lift off the heaven, the Janis Joplin noise. So suddenly I'm sitting sweetie and still I'm feeling rather dreamy. Oh, I am a mountain river stream. See the H2O gush between me and you. I buzz up me other brother Buddha on the old alphabetical silly bells. So yo, boot, I'm all in the flow, boot. I'm wading deep in this alphabetical silly spell. Do you fancy popping over for some trivial pursuits? Is he now man just about to scrub the gluey? Pure truth. Says I know about the Buddha. Sure I'll chant with you a prayer of shampoo. A deity has got to do what a deity has got to do. And now that my fantasy contact list is all gone through, I find myself standing here talking to you. Yes, momentarily, flow ventarily, tis I who be speaking the spoken word. And I can tell how you have all have listened, I can tell how you have heard my mother and sister Michael Stotsy and me buddy bud. And I thank you all for that. You have done my head goody good. But I needed to flee. Fancy for flight, and thankfully poetry romances skulls light. I met Michael Collins in my dreams last night, and we yapped it till the yawn of the dawn. Tall.